Danny Zucker is best known for his Emmy award-winning work as an executive producer of ABC's Modern Family. Zucker has worked in various capacities on a variety of TV shows, including Just Shoot Me, Grace Under Fire, and Roseanne. Hi, Danny.
Hi. How are you?
So happy you're here. It looks like you have a ring light.
I know. Well, that's just my natural glow.
How's your pandemic going?
Oh, it's so cool. It's the greatest. I mean, there is like, we were all very sad because like 11 seasons of the show ended. And yeah. I never had a job more than 2.5 years in the decades I've been working. And
really?
So like, we're all kind of like bumming that our show ended. And then like the world show ended. And it was like, okay, I guess we all are pushing reset right now.
Yeah, that must be so surreal for you.
Very, very weird. Very weird.
Because here you were like working, I'm assuming every day for like the last 11 years.
A lot. Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
always knowing. Yeah. You know, even on hiatus, you have coming back to a job and all of that. So it's very strange.
Did you ever work from home or you went into the office all the time?
Went into the office all the time. I mean, when you're off on a script, you can write that wherever you want. But, like, you know, we come up with the stories as a group. We rewrite them as a group. Basically, the time that you're on is your first draft. Which you get a week to write that first draft. And you can pretty much do that anywhere. I've done it at hotels. I've done it all over the place. Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
So I'm surprised that that show ended because everybody loved it so much.
11 seasons. It was time.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, creatively. I mean, I would have said, you know, let's keep cashing the checks, but creatively we were, the most interesting family you've ever met has about 10 stories that they can break out at parties. But maybe like the Obamas have 15, you know, but like each one of these families had 250 stories. So it's a little bit hard to kind of keep that fresh and all that. Oh, hi, Christine.
Hi, Christine.
I know her. Go on.
Will you guys do some kind of spinoff, like a Better Call Saul?
I mean, there's talk. There's, you know, I think everybody's sort of just like, healing just a little bit. But yeah, there's this preliminary discussions in the works. So we'll see.
Okay. How did you get into that job?
I mean, I've been doing. I wanted to be in comedy since I was a very little boy. And I remember when I was like 5 or 6 years old, I was not very in tune with the Jewish experience growing up. Like we had Christmas tree, but the most Jewish thing about me was that my grandfather on my mom's side was a bartender in the Catskills, and which was like the Borscht Belt with all the comics. And this is like, so like in the early 70s, I was like 5 or something or 6 and I meet this guy, friend of my grandpa's, and this flashy guy with big lapels, and his name was Van Harris. His real name was probably like Shlomo Rabinowitz, but it was, Van Harris, and he told me he was a comedian and was telling me jokes, and I was just like, oh, that seems like a good gig. And so like, I really was a comedy nerd and started out as a PA, got my first writing jobs when I had the chance, and, you know, just got into it. I was very lucky though to get this, you know, Modern Family coming kind of late in my career was, what a great bonus.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you feel like was there any kind of secret sauce to landing that gig or anything that you felt like you did like a special?
You know, on that show, no. I mean, I knew both Chris, Lloyd, but and Steve Levitan created the show, and so Steve, I'd worked on since Just Shoot Me, and it was just like one of those things. It was like I was available, and there was a show that was going on, and they liked me, and it was a good match of a show for my the time. My twin girls were the same age as the kids on that show, and they still are the same age as the kids on that show. And then I have a son who was a couple years younger, so I was like living that world, and so I was able to all of us mined a lot of stories from our lives and put them out on the screen.
That's so cool. So was that like the writing process? Like, would you guys come in and kind of brainstorm what happened in your life that week?
A lot of times, yeah. I mean, especially in those early, I mean, it's funny because, you know, even we would start to like, I'd start to look at, you know, we would tell our best, you know, 10 stories. And then it's like, then you're like looking at your kids and you're like, Jesus Christ, do something interesting. You know? Daddy needs a story.
And did you ever have like things happen with your kids and you were like, kind of like, oh, this is a bit of a crisis, but it's going to make a great episode.
Oh, totally. Absolutely. And, or, you know, or marriage stuff, or yeah, it was all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. That's, I guess that's how we're lucky as comics or comedy writers, is like whenever something happens, it's always like, oh God, yeah, this is horrific, but it's going to make an amazing story.
Yeah. Yeah. The people in our lives may not feel as lucky sometimes, but yeah.
Did you ever have people see characters on the show and go, hey, is that based on something I did?
Yeah, and they're almost always wrong. I mean, which is funny, but it's like, no. I mean, sometimes I'll say yes just to make them feel better, but a lot of times they're wrong. I was pretty specific about the things. I kind of had enough. But no, that's not true. There were a couple ones that were definitely based on somebody else, and they called me out on it. So, yeah, that definitely happened, for sure.
Did you have to say, like, make it up to them, or were you just like, hey, I'm a writer?
It's like the price of admission.
Yeah. That's this director told me once, if you live through it, you get to write about it.
That's a good question. Yes. So I'm looking down that question. What room ever have kids walk in on them during set?
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah.
The question that someone wrote in, VW Girl 11, did anyone in the writer's room ever have their kids walk in on them during sex?
And they did. Yeah, that was exactly what it, Steve Levitan had that happen, and we knew we were going to make that into a story. So yeah, of course.
Perfect.
So much we've mined from our lives.
That's so cool. So like, what do you feel like now, like having all this free time and all this stuff?
It's weird. I don't know. I wish I were being more productive than I'm being, which is normal. But I just don't know. I mean, a part of me is kind of liking the break and the downtime. And then the money will run out, and then I'll be like, oh shit, I'm going to get working again. But, you know, I'm pitching a few things. I'm working with a couple writers and, on some, you know, nascent ideas, but, it's one of those things, like, I'll know what the next thing is when I see it. You know, it's like, I'll know what that thing I most want to do is. Like, and a part of me thinks, like, there are a couple things that could be it, or it might be something I haven't even thought of yet. So,
that's an exciting window.
Yeah, of course.
So, let me ask you, what sort of pivotal moment or trauma did you overcome, and how did that inform your creative process?
Wow. I was joking with you when you asked me. It's like, how do I pick one? I'm sorry. This is not COVID. This is quitting smoking.
Oh, good for you. Take your moment.
So that's the trauma that I want to talk about, is being cut off on Instagram Live. And I'm still processing it, really. I don't know what to do.
Yeah, here we are, you know, just doing a great interview show, and then Instagram Live cuts us off, and now it's like at a pivotal question.
I mean, I don't know if I can get the tears back, but let me try. okay, so here was my my trauma, other than this, was it's about like 22 years ago. But like I was doing all of the cocaine in the world. Like I was just doing all of the.
Okay, wait. So 22 years ago, you were doing all the drugs, all the cocaine.
I just liked cocaine quite a bit. And wound up like starting a house, and I was, And I was like good at sort of covering it. And I had a job on a TV show and I was like hiding money. And it was just really, really bad. I was living this secret life and I was like, and it was.
Wait, what TV show were you writing on? Elf?
Just Shoot Me.
I'm just kidding. You know that movie Permanent Midnight? The guy was writing on Elf.
Right. Let me even tell you about that.
Okay.
While I was so completely fucked up, I was reading Permanent Midnight and could not see myself in it at all. In fact, the only thing I could think of was like Elf. You know, it's like I'm belittling Elf, like not the story at all.
So you were reading Permanent Midnight about heroin, right? But then you, a TV writer on heroin.
He was a heroin.
Jerry Stahl.
Yeah, he was heroin. I was cocaine.
And you were doing a lot. You were snorting a house.
I was snorting a house. Yeah.
What does that mean, snorting a house? Does that mean like all day, like you wake up and do coke all day?
If you put a price tag on the amount of cocaine I did over the several years I was doing it, it would have been a house.
Okay. And I'm assuming that's not a tiny house. That's like,
I mean, let's put it this way. It's not, it would be like a nice house, you know, outside somewhere in Ohio. Might be like, I think maybe like, a condo here in Los Angeles.
Okay. So a condo in the marina.
Yeah. A condo in the marina is about right. Maybe, I mean, not like it would be a fixer upper. I don't want to overstate how much coke I did. But let's put it this way. When I first 22 years ago when I was writing this when I came up with this analogy, it was closer to a house. But now in today's dollars, it's a guest house, a bungalow in a not great neighborhood, up and coming. Like just pre-gentrified.
So like, did you have to have someone delivering it to you all the time?
Or what was your
process?
It was horrible. Well, so this is how you build a cocaine habit. So I would travel to my dealer and I would be like, but I was always thinking it was never an issue. So I first, like, I'd get a gram of cocaine and then start my day. And then I'd realize, holy shit, you know, I don't want to have to keep going back the next morning.
Sure.
Why don't I get 2 grams? But then those 2 grams would be gone already. And that's how, and I eventually got to 5 grams of cocaine a day. So it's like $500 a day habit of cocaine.
Oh my gosh. So what does that look like? Like, first of all, is the gram, sorry, I don't know the math, but is that like this much cocaine?
You're thinking, oh my God, no. I mean, I'm warm. I'm not getting sexy. It's a gram. It's like, like a little, one of those little baggies.
Okay. The little baggie. Okay. So you do.
But 5 of those.
Like 5 of those. And so you basically just have to do like a little all day and then it's like gone.
And I was doing it all the time. And it was like, I would just it didn't get me high. It just kind of got me. But the only thing it did was make me not want more cocaine for that short amount of time. So
did you have repercussions like headaches if you didn't have it or you were cranky
I was irritable, I was cranky, I fucked up my nose. I don't recommend it. It was horrible.
Were you like mean to people?
I probably was mean to people and I was also and distant and isolated and just was
all the things.
Yeah, all of it. And I it was really bad. And then my wife and I had twins and I managed to stay clean for 2 nights and then just picked it right up again. And it was basically my daughters were like 5 months old and I was like, I couldn't hide the money anymore. And I was going out of my mind. I was hallucinating from not sleeping. And she like went through the bank records and saw it. I was like, I didn't put up a fight. I was like, yes, I have a real problem. And, you know, it was like, it was all about, you know, it was surrendering, you know, it was about like, just, I surrendered to it. You know, I said like, I need fucking help. And it was like, it was a huge relief. I mean, really, it was like, it was rough. What was funny was, not funny, but, so I get off cocaine. I had a shrink who gave me, you know, prescribed me some Klonopin to relax me while I was there. And I wound up sleeping for about 2.5-3 days, like really like get up a little, but sleeping all the way through. And when I woke up from that, I felt great. And I really thought that, I got it beat. I was never really an addict. Like I thought, like I was not an addict. I just was doing it too much, and now I'm stopped. But I'm going to go to rehab to as penance to my family. You know, it's like I have to go to rehab to people, so I'm going to go there. And I literally was there for about a week, still trying to get out of going being in rehab, and utterly convinced that I was not an addict. And it was only like somewhere like day 7, it sort of hit me that. Oh wait, no! I'm not only an addict. I'm like I'm a run of the mill, regular old cocaine addict.
So you realized that at like a week into rehab.
Yeah, a week into rehab, probably 10 days, 11 days into not doing cocaine. That was when it's like, oh wow. And so, and like I said, you know, like it was very freeing to do that and to not have that, and you know. I was at your Shoot Me. This is why I love being a comedy writer, and I like that my peer group with comedy, because it makes it, it's what I, they speak my language. But like, I left that afternoon, like basically when I got the call from my wife, I'd seen the bag say that you have to come home. I just walked out of the work. It was the middle of the day. I walked out of the work and I didn't show up for a month. Like my lawyer called and said they didn't know what happened to me. People thought, like, because I was acting kind of, I was acting kind of sick, and they pinned drugs on me at that point, and they were thinking, oh, did he die and all that. So eventually, we told, you know, people told the people I was working with, hey, he's got a cocaine problem, he's gone, and like I came into work, and I'll never forget. I always will feel very indebted to Steve Levitan for this, but he was like, I said if you don't mind, I'd like to just like. Talk to the room this morning, and they can ask me all the questions they want, because I've been lying to these people. I'd probably be a little cranky with them. I was like not my best self all the way through, and I'll answer any question they have for hours. And we took the whole morning, and I just talked about like what that was like, and they asked me questions about it. And then I got up to go to the bathroom, and when I came back, someone had taken a sugar packet and cut two lines of sugar right in front of me. And I love that so much as a comedy writer, because it meant that we can make jokes about it.
And, that's so great.
I remember telling that story in a meeting, and people were horrified. But you know, that's what speaks to comedy writers.
Yeah, that's comedy writers. So, how long had you been on cocaine at that time?
I mean, I was on and off it for many years. I was doing it in a very serious way for a couple of years. You know, it had gotten out. It was finally out of control for a couple of years.
Somebody says, did you do the lines?
The lines of sugar? I mean, I was tempted to.
Wow. So that's amazing. So what helped you, like, get through that time?
Well, you know, my family, my therapists, I'm not currently like in 12 steps, but, and I have nothing bad to say about it. There were things about it that I just veered away from, but I followed all the rules for a very long time and talked to people and kept it very fresh in my head. And that really helped, quite a bit.
What did you veer away from about it? Like what turned you off or didn't really work for you anymore?
I'm always reluctant to talk about it because I don't want to take it away from other people.
Sure.
I had certain trouble with, I was happy to like have the burden of my addiction be lifted from me, that it was like, and that there was an all loving God who was like looking out for me and all that stuff. But it eventually became a little, they say that it's okay for agnostics, but a lot of times the meetings are not, you know, it's a little more gaudy than I like.
Yeah.
Or that I'm comfortable with doing in a large.
Yeah. I hear you. Oh wait, I think you froze. Okay, there you are. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I hear you.
Yay.
Okay, Danny, what did that, did that, like, overcoming, well, I didn't even want to cut you off. Did you have more traumas than that was the chief? Okay. So that's like, that's big time. So, like,
oh, for sure.
How did that inform your creative process, like overcoming cocaine addiction?
Well, I mean, the thing about addiction is it lies to you so much. So it's like, you can't write without cocaine, which is so bananas. Like, I can almost get the argument for weed, because sometimes that gets people's minds going, not mine, but does. And it's like, but cocaine doesn't make you more creative. Cocaine makes you like, you're going like this. It keeps you up, but it doesn't make you more creative. So it was like, you know, writing that first script I have to write for a show without cocaine, was very free. It was difficult, but it was also like, oh, I don't need this. I don't need the crutch. I mean, because it was always like a thing I would do is like, okay, let's get through the first act and you have a little cocaine. But then it was like, you write a page and you have a little cocaine. Like, that was like, so just getting rid of that process, bringing those habits was key.
Yeah. Yeah. I've had that too when I've quit things and I thought, oh, I can't possibly write if I don't wake up and smoke a pack of cigarette, like the mental, the lie that you can't do things without the thing.
It tells you need it.
Yeah. So that's just the hardest part is going through that withdrawal and then getting used to a life where you actually start to see that it's a lie, because like in my case, I'm like such a better writer when I don't have to stop and.
Yeah. Me too.
Smoke.
Me too. Yeah. It's so much better.
It's so much better.
So much better.
We're so lucky.
I'm still struggling with the nicotine monster.
Okay.
As I put nicotine gum in my mouth.
How long have you been on the nicotine?
Well, I was good. Like, I had stopped smoking this summer. My smoker's cough in about a week. This is what happens. But, over the break, over the holidays, I got triggered and it came back, but I've been off it now. So
good. Are you just doing the gum? Or did you read that Easy Way to Stop Smoking book?
No, I was just doing the gum. I wasn't smoking that much this time. Last time I did Chantix, which really did help.
What's that?
It's this drug you take and it just makes it like not. It does really affect your urges, and then you wean off of it, and it really did work. It gives you some crazy dreams, but it was good.
What's it called?
Chantix. Chantix.
Crazy dreams, like hallucinogenic dreams?
Well, when you're in the dreams, it's just like they're just vivid and weird, and the imagery. So, I mean, I don't know if they're nightmares necessarily, but they're not pleasant.
Did you... They're not pleasant, but they help you quit.
Well, no, I think that's just a side effect. the Chantix itself, like during the day, just it does reduce urges. Like you feel it. And even when you have one, like it doesn't taste as good, or, you know, it's like it seems to do something to whatever serotonin uptake receptors or whatever.
Okay, you know, got it. You know. I always laugh so much when I see you, and then my throat starts hurting.
Oh, that's good.
Because you always make me laugh. It is good. It's positive.
You always make me cough, so it works out.
What is your current creative process for staying sane during the pandemic?
It's a day-to-day moment for me, and I'm not sure I have it all figured out.
Yeah.
I go up and down. I've had like, you know, it's been a challenging year personally this year, which I won't talk about here now, but I've had like those challenges that seem very reminiscent of the cocaine and all that. So it's like, I'm trying to take it day by day. I'm trying not to be like, I know that try not to get too attached to like the ups or the downs, just to know that it's a wave. And that's when I'm at my happiest. But it's a day-to-day challenge. I'm doing a lot of therapy, which has been helpful.
Oh, that's great. Do you do it on Zoom or phone?
I do it. I wasn't, but now I do it on, now I do it on FaceTime. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Like,
it's been helpful.
How did you find your therapist? Was it recommended?
Well, it was a recommendation. Like, when some of the personal stuff was going south, it was recommended. And I've had so many shrinks and therapists and whatnot, and I always can find some reason to I can, the smallest thing I could get, make them go away, like, or dismiss them. Like, oh my God, that my last, this therapist said, irregardless, oh, they're an idiot, I can't use them. You know, like, I'll take a little stupid thing like that or lie to them. And, currently the woman who's just so smart and is no bullshit and is, I was like ready to just be like completely honest and not perform. Because always very, I think for comedy people, like, are we go into therapy and a lot of my goal is I want to be the most entertaining client she has, which is not particularly helpful.
It's true. You can get it, like, you can get into, entertaining versus.
Yeah. So I'm trying not to be that, and she's been great. I've been with her for, like not 9 months, and I'm really, it's been good.
So she wasn't around, she wasn't with you in the cocaine years.
No, she's a recent addition.
So
I probably had 4 or 5 since the cocaine years.
Okay, so you've gone through 4 or 5, and one of them, one of the therapists said irregardless, and that was it, they were done.
I was just sort of like using that as an example, but it could be anything that small. It could be like, I would always look for a reason to dismiss them in some way. Or if I lied to them and they bought it, I'd be like, if they challenged me on something and I lied and they were like, oh, that makes sense, and they bought it, I'd be like, okay, you're done. I'd write them off, So
you were like testing them.
Yeah. And it was like silly. And the DW girl saying, I hope she doesn't screw up. And even if she does, I forgive her now because she's earned my trust.
And so you how often do you do therapy?
Sorry. Jesus.
Oh my gosh. It's because I'm making you talk so much.
I know. R.I.P. Danny. It was, I was, fuck. I was doing it twice a week, pretty regularly before the new year. And then I tapered back to once a week, but it's been good. I do it now once a week, and it's been super helpful.
Yeah, it's so great to talk to a non-judgmental.
Yeah.
Person.
Someone who's kind of on your team.
Does it help you with writing?
Absolutely.
Because it clears your head of all the.
The negative voices, I have like these voices in my head that are constantly like telling me I'm a fraud and I'm useless.
Really?
Constantly. I mean, I don't know how many scripts I've written in primetime television in my life, but a lot. And every single script I turn in, I am utterly convinced this is the one that they're going to discover I'm a huge fraud.
What do you think that's from?
I mean, it's ain't. It was from trying to love me, daddy. It's that kind of stuff. Stuff with all the children, the child stuff. I think that's what it is.
What's the deal with your dad?
wow.
What's the deal with your dad?
I don't know. I was very blessed. I think people in comedy. I think people in comedy who had a dad who didn't pay attention to them a lot have just such an advantage. Like, I don't know why anybody would do this who had, like, a dad who showed them any kind of affection at all.
True. Amen.
I don't understand it. I mean, I feel like it's just this, like, to me, they're unicorns. When I go, oh, no, my parents are my best friends. How are you funny? Why are you funny? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, their friend, those people were like, their parents were like, you're great. I'm sorry. Good luck with comedy.
Yeah, here's like, I tell this is a pretty easy story to tell. Of like, when people are like, oh, what, why do you think you're funny? I'll just tell this story of growing up. So I'm the oldest. I have two younger sisters. And, you know, my dad was a fighter pilot, and then came back and became like a successful businessman. And, you know, we were upper middle class in New Jersey. But and I was like not like a great athlete ever, and he was like he was macho ish guy, and I was not, you know, that wasn't where my I felt, maybe that's chicken and egg, maybe if he threw a ball with me I would have been, but I don't know, who knows, let's just say that. But anyway, so fairly early, so when I'm a kid. So there was, we had neighbors, like, you know, a couple streets away. And my dad would always play tennis down at these tennis courts. He was a really good tennis player. And there were these kids who were, the youngest one was this kid who was, he was like 2 years older than me and a real jockey kid. And that was good. The middle kid was 4 years older than me and another jockey kid. And then they had an older sister who was probably 8 years older than I was. And my dad would go, you know, play tennis with them and do all this stuff with them. One time, like, literally, it's like Super Bowl, and he was like, left, I'm going to go watch it with these kids. And I was like, you're not going to watch the Super Bowl with me? I'm going, oh. Like, it was like, I used to joke in my act that my dad didn't leave my mom. He left me. He was like, one day, he's like, you know, look, I met other kids. It's not you. Feel young. I don't know. It's, they just that was really true. And then the story has a really fun ending in that my dad went on to leave my mom for the oldest sister, who he knew when she was, you know, she probably met her when she was 16 or 17. And I mean, he didn't leave her until she was like, they didn't hook up. I mean, not that I know of, until she was in her mid 20s or something. But yeah, so that was like, so that's why I'm funny. I was always like, these boys, he's always telling me how great they were. So I was like, okay, I'll just be great at everything. So I was like, star of the plays. I was doing stand up in New York. I was like, vice president of my class. I was like this overachieving kid. I was the kid every other parent wanted their kid to be, except my fucking dad. It was like, and I, like, looking back, I was like, I was so much better than those losers. No, they're fine. I don't have anything. Yeah. So.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty good, right?
Well, that's, yeah, honestly, like, after you process it and do all the work around it, you're like, yeah, what a gift, actually, because who the hell would want to stand in front of an audience and be like, look at me, pathology.
There's a writer, it's so funny, and it's like, because I used to do this bit, one of my first shots was Howard Stern, I was telling them he did this bit, and like, Howard loves this, so he uses it on the show now, but it originated with the writer's room on Roseanne. But I was like, on the writer's room, Roseanne, I'm doing a room bit that's drawing all this attention to me. And Tim Doyle just looks at me and goes, love me, daddy. And it was so perfect. And it definitely defines a lot of my personality. Love me, daddy. So, yeah.
Okay, that's going to be the hashtag for your episode.
Love me, daddy.
No, I'm just kidding. That's a beautiful
coughing.
So like, how did you actually move through that or make peace with that?
You know, I just, it was interesting because like, I kind of worshiped my dad up until this point. It was one of those things where he seemed like a cool guy. He started his own business. He had money. He was like, he was a fighter pilot. Oh, yeah, I get why he wants to play with those kids, but I'll get his attention that way. And then when it all started to be revealed to me, like, around 16 or 17, I did, like, just this huge switch. I was like, fuck it, I'm just going to – I know what I want to do. And so, I, you know, just – I guess it just – there was a part of me inside me that just – I never wanted to do anything else with or without him, you know, what independent of him. I always wanted to do what I wanted to do with my life. And I just – like – but it was like he would undermine – like, I heard the expression, I still think about this, but the first time I ever heard the expression, big fish in a small pond, was from him, because like I was like the funny guy at my school, and at college I was like the funny guy at my college, and I was like, yeah, I want to make a career of this. And it's like, well, you know, you go out to LA or New York, that's where all the best are, you know, right now you're a big fish in a small pond. And it was like, I was so thrilled when I got paid to write jokes and do comedy, because it was like, I get your big fish right here.
I love that. I love that story. It was it was irrespective of what he was doing.
Yes, that's very good.
So Andrew Secunda, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly. Secunda.
Tim Doyle was obviously very much awesome. No, Tim's an amazing writer friend, and he's just very good at identifying. Writers are really good at finding thing in you that will make them, like, because we can take it. You have to have a thick skin in the comedy writer's room.
Yeah.
And we love it. You know, it's like, you don't last very long, so we're very good at, somebody who can't take a joke about themselves has a very hard time in the comedy room. I've watched drama writers walk into comedy rooms, like, they've done drama, and they'll come into a comedy room, or they're like, oh, yeah, we're doing this thing. And a lot of times they can be horrified.
Have you ever seen someone like just get crumbled in a writer's room?
I have. It's never like people are really into. I mean, the point is usually people aren't. If somebody is starting to show signs of wear, it's not like we're going to beat them up more then. No, we're all assuming we can sort of joust. But every now and then you'll hit somebody's sacred cow and you'll be like, oh, I didn't know. And then we all feel bad, and then you try and make it up to them. But yeah. But it's hard to have sacred cows in there. It just is.
Yeah. Did you guys have pretty much the same staff the whole time at Modern Family?
No. Is this sexy? What I'm doing right now?
It is.
Thank you.
Actually, this episode is sponsored by Kleenex.
Thank you. No, we had some turnover. A lot of people, you know, some people who left, some people who didn't work out, some people who shouldn't have stayed, who didn't, you know, all the usual politics of the show.
Oh my gosh, I wonder what you're going to do next.
I do too. Have you heard of anything?
It's nice to have a break.
I need it.
It's nice to just be a human being, not a human doing.
Whoa. Holy shit. That should be a fortune cookie.
You know what? How about just be right now, Danny?
Oh my God. Yeah, let's just be. Well, be. Yeah. Don't do be.
Does anyone have any other questions for Danny? I love the scripts you've been posting on IG, VW Girl says.
I was doing little Trump-like scripts where it was, they're little political things. Those are really fun to do for a while. And if another one occurs to me, but then it was like anything else, I would have like, I would do them, I'd get a good response of, hey, what's tomorrow's script going to be? And then it was like, oh, this has become a job. Let's do something else. So, but it's been fun. I will say, you know, you're asking me how I'm getting through this.
Yeah.
Doing funny shit on the internet, or making little funny videos, or doing funny tweets or whatever, it's like, it's been a real release, because there's no, like, I'm not going to get money from it. And it's just purely, I'm getting laughs. Like, or it's like, I could do something fun like that. I just, like, it's been nourishing. Like, I'll wake up and I'll think, like, oh, yeah, I want to make that little video, or I want to do this little thing, or I have this idea for this, and I'll just do that. And it's been fun. It's been fun to just do that.
Well, you know, that's one thing that I've always loved about you are so prolific and generous with your creativity and your humor, because – here you are, like, working this beyond full-time job, and you're also, like, writing a book and, like, tweeting at the president and, like, making all these funny things and finding time to do shows. You found time to come and do my little show, TV Writers and Comedians, and you killed it, and everyone loved you. And I just – how do you have all the energy to do all that stuff?
Here's the thing. Like, a lot of times people ask me, like, what my hobby is or what the things are, and it's not that I don't have hobbies – but I really love comedy. Like, I love solving joke problems. I love being able to go perform if I can, or I love doing that. Like, it's like, that's fun for me. Like, and so, like, look, there are times I just want to unwind and watch Netflix, and I do a lot of that. And, but a lot of the time, it's just like, the thing that makes it, like, I could be writing a show all day long, just wanting to kill myself, even on the great, you know, a Days of Modern Family, like a great fucking show, but it's still a job, and you're there, and you can't figure something out, you just want to leave. And after a long day of that, I just got to get home, and I'll unwind, and writing a joke helps me unwind. It's the weirdest thing, but it's just like, you know, it's sort of like you're called to it. It's like, you know, I'm not comparing myself to a professional athlete, but with all the professional athletes, when I hear them talk, the one thing I do relate to, like when I used to talk about Kobe, is like after a game, how he would, after like a killer game, he would then go somewhere and just like shoot free throws somewhere or work on something. It's like he just played like the game, and he just said, because that's what I like to do. And I do understand that. I'm not nearly as driven as he was, but I think people, you know, you have to like to. I guess you have to like it.
Yeah, it brings you and a lot of other people great joy, and also, it's just also I think there's a momentum. Like if you're not using your gifts and talents, they do get rusty. Yeah. But if you're like out there like writing all the time, then you're like kind of unwinding by writing because you're just still in that momentum.
Completely, and you're right, Naples. It's completely like being a musician and making songs. You know, it's like, you go back and absolutely. It's all that.
It's Fred Giovanniti says he would like to subscribe to your YouTube. Do you have a YouTube?
I don't really have one. I occasionally post things on YouTube, but I should do a YouTube channel. Makeup tutorials?
You got to get a ring light.
I got to get a ring light.
And then you can apply those things.
Yeah. Don't get all technical with me. I don't know. Apply those things. I don't know of what you speak.
Well, like where, what do you do any kind of exercise stuff? Like, do you go outside and walk, like a social distance walk or anything?
Yeah, I have to do that every day if I can. I didn't today. And I feel it. Like, I just was like, today was sort of a day. I did a little cleaning, but it was like, I should exercise more. I have been more over this break. I should be doing, I've been eating healthier, which has been good.
What are you eating?
I'm just getting a lot of, like, I got a bunch of like veggie meals. I'm trying to like limit meat a little bit. I'll have like meat like once a week, like real red meat, which I love, but just like little fish. And I mean, they're still prepared meals, but they're ostensibly better than what I would do. Trying not to snack on junk. I love like, you know, I just love like chips and all that stuff. Like I just like whiz through some Flaming Hot Cheetos in a second.
Do you have food delivery? Is someone delivering these meals? By the way, Soleil says, when is Doing It with Danny and Jenny coming back?
Soon. I'm actually going to give her a call right when we get up. We're going to do a live one soon.
Okay.
Maybe in the next 2 weeks. Yeah.
Look for that on Danny's Instagram.
Yeah.
Okay.
I did have some food delivery. It became too hard for them during this COVID thing. So just getting my own stuff.
Yeah. Cool. Well, what, have you ever had to like hire writers at Modern Family?
I definitely recommended writers. I've had to hire writers on other shows, for sure.
How did you choose who, like, what made you choose the people that you chose?
Okay. So the ones I hadn't worked with, because that's usually what you'll do is you'll fill out a staff because you'll like know, oh, she's really great. I know this person. I've worked with them. I know that. But for the blind sort of hire, it's a crapshoot, man. It's just really hard. You'll read their scripts. You'll really like them. You hope that they wrote them, or, you know, wrote them alone. But, you know, a good one will definitely appeal to you. And then you'll, you know, you'll have like your, you know, half hour, 1 hour meeting with them, see what they're like, you know, on their best behavior. And then after that, it's a crapshoot. I mean, it's like, it's really hard to know. And it's what's fun. And you'll talk to your friends, like, and you'll check their references too. And, but it's very, very tricky because like I've recommended writers who I've worked with to other showrunners on other shows, where it didn't work out for them. And it's not that, it's not anybody's fault really. It's like, oh, their personality, their talent jived with this particular project and maybe it didn't go with this. And every room has its own flavor.
Yeah.
And, but it's really, really hard. It's like, these are like, they're like arranged marriages off of speed dating, really. And so you sort of hope that you, I'm sure we overlook a lot of great writers, and I'm sure, you know, a lot of writers who maybe would have been better suited at other shows you hire, and that happens all the time.
Did anyone come in and tell like a really amazing story that you were like, okay, that's the guy, like he told crazy story?
Usually like on somebody I hire, there is something that's like, I'll take out of that meeting. I'll be like, oh yeah, that would be great. That's a great energy. They come from a fucked up place. That would be great. Or they have this experience. That would be great. But even then, sometimes it's like you'll hire somebody and it'll be like, and sometimes it's like you get that story and it's great. And then they flourish and you were exactly right. And then some other times it's like, oh, that was their story. That was the one story they had.
Okay, somebody asked, what was your favorite character on Modern Family?
So everybody always asks that. It's really, it's so hard.
Yeah, it's an ensemble. It's like picking your family.
It's an ensemble thing. I really did enjoy, the character I most like to write for frequently, obviously, you know, Phil Dunphy is great. You want to write those lines. But I really loved writing for Mitchell. For Jesse Tyler Ferguson, because his rhythm was so, he just has, if you watch him as a performer, he has like such an interesting rhythm, because it's not quite, really isn't being a straight man. He is straight man to Cameron, to Eric, but there's a, it's just, he has such an interesting rhythm, and like locking into his rhythm as a writer, like hearing that voice in your head, being able to like sort of channel that, I always found like, oh, that feels good. Trying that voice on feels really good. So.
What are your favorite shows that you like to binge watch?
I weirdly like dramas a lot. And, you know, so.
What do you like?
What?
Which one?
I just watched, I can't believe I never heard of this show before. Because I was like at a party and people were talking about their favorite shows. And the normal ones come up, you know, like Breaking Bad, The Wire. Are fantastic. I love them. They're like, and I put them in the pantheon of the greatest television of all time. At a party, and like two people mentioned a show I never heard of. It ran two seasons on Amazon, and it's called Patriot. And it ended in 2016. And I was like, what? I mean, television. How do I not hear about the show? Anyway, I watch it. It might be like 18, 20 episodes. It is one of the best shows I've ever seen. I just go watch it. It's like if Homeland were funny and weird and not straight ahead, it's like no other show I've seen. It's just, I really like it a lot.
Okay, cool.
I mean, I was a big fan of BoJack Horseman because it's just so brilliant. And I actually like Raphael Bob Waksberg's other show that he did, I think it's on Amazon as well, Undone, which is great. It's this beautiful rotoscoped animation, but it has a lot to say about mental illness, and it's really well done. So Those are a couple.
All right, cool. What do you want to do before the end of the times?
It's not the end of the time yet.
No, the end of end times, before the world ends. Is there anything else? Because you've done so much already. Like if it ends now, are you going to be happy? Or do you want to do like a little more?
No, I always want more. I mean, I'd like to do, I wouldn't mind doing it. You know, I'd love to do a show. You know, I'd love to do a streaming show or a show that only did 8 or 10 episodes. That would be like really fun, where I could just sort of like write them all.
Yeah.
Write them all in a small group.
limited, and, what's that called? Limited series.
Yeah, either a limited series or just one where it's like 8 to 10 shows a season, or, but you're like really working on those two. Yeah, so I'd love to do that. I don't know. I'd love to perform more. I've been like working on stand-up, so I'd love to do that more.
Oh, yeah. How were your shows recently?
I'm like, Jenny, they were pretty good. You know, I'm like rough, but like I did 4 shows in D.C. I opened for her, and first one was a little rough, but not like a lot. Like, people liked it still. And then, but from the second to fourth, I mean, I need to work on my material like nobody's business. But I felt confident. I was good. It was like, I was like, oh, yeah, I remember this. It was really fun. I'm going to do this more.
That's so great. Yeah, you're a natural performer, you know?
Oh, that's nice of you to say because you're so talented at that. So that means a lot coming from you. And you teach it. So I really want to hear that.
Well, I'm so excited to see what all you do.
Me too.
In your human being phase.
Yeah, being. Not doing, being.
Just being. When is your, what are your upcoming things that people can find you and see you doing? You're doing a podcast.
I'm doing a podcast. I'll be,
a podcast.
I'll be here on my couch.
And where do people get tickets for that? To see you on your couch?
Yeah. You just, right now you can go through Live Nation. it's the Watch Me Masturbate Tour. And I think you guys are really going to love it. It's,
are there different seating?
We did previews in Boston to much acclaim. well, thank you. This is so nice.
I'm so happy that you could be here. And I think you're the best.
You're one of my favorites. You know that from the minute I met you. So I feel the same. So. Good luck with all of this, and it was my pleasure. First of all, it's just nice to talk to you.
You too, Danny. All right, I'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye. Hi, guys. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. If you enjoyed it, I'd appreciate it if you could share it with someone else who could also enjoy or benefit from it by either sending the link or sharing it on your socials, tweeting about it, Facebooking it, Instagramming it, TikToking it, whatever you kids do. Also, how about being a sponsor? You can sponsor this podcast for only like $5 a month or whatever amount you want to give toward its imminent success. Just click on Anchor subscribe button and be a part of our team. Thanks so much for your support. We can't do it without you. And we love you very much. Bye.